Hello again, everybody. This is, as we've said, a daily show. Very different. We hold no punches. So look for it. Truth bomb number one. Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson for more than $500,000. That's how much money he got before he voted to send money to Israel and Ukraine. We're going to tell you all about it. Truth bomb number two. The Ukrainian military in full retreat. Who says that? Not me, a Ukrainian general. Truth bomb number three. Students at two more universities here in the United States are joining these mass protests that are taking place all over the country. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. All right, I want to begin with something that we have really just learned about the leader of the U.S. Congress, and it's, I'd say, slightly revealing. We're talking about Speaker Mike Johnson. This is the guy who told us he would not be sending money, not be sending money to Ukraine or Israel or anywhere else for that matter until we first spent it here in the United States to fix problems that affect us, like the problems at the border, for example. Then one day he says, the hell with the border and the hell with us. And he pushes through a measure to send even more than people expected. Pushes through essentially a measure that sends almost $100 billion or thereabouts to Ukraine and Taiwan and Israel. What happened, right? Well, here's what he said back then.
Israel is a critical ally of ours, and I think most people understand the necessity of this funding. They're fighting for their very existence. They're the only stable democracy in the Middle East. I mean, of course, there's, for those of us who are believers, it's a biblical admonition to stand with Israel. We will, and they will prevail as long as they're with them. And this is an important, very important symbolic gesture and a very important replenishment of their stockpiles, for example, of the Iron Dome.
There you go. Kind of said something similar about Ukraine. So that's what he said then. Today, Twitter is abuzz with reports that, according to FEC records, there's another reason that Johnson perhaps came to this decision. Actually, there are maybe 524,000 reasons, because that is how much money Johnson apparently received in a check from AIPAC, the group that pays off, the group that pays off politicians on behalf of Israel. $500,000. But wait, there's more. There's also a record of another $95,000 that he got from another foreign lobby group to pass more military aid. What are we to make of this? Let's find out as we're joined by a friend of the show, international relations and security analyst Mark Sloboda. So as your old friend Gomer Pyle would say, surprise, surprise. Maybe you're not.
No, Rick, I think you'll remember that, well, I've been saying since November that eventually this aid will be passed, this military weapons for the Kiev regime in Ukraine, for separatists in Taiwan, and, of course, for continuing Israeli genocide in Palestine. I'm only shocked that it actually took so long. And it is the speed of the about face, the long period of holding out and insisting that American border security must come first, seemingly having a good leverage position against the White House going into an election year. But then just at the last minute, just completely dropping it all and going wholesale. And, you know, with this money that you point out coming from a military industrial complex for Johnson, maybe I'm cynical, but I find this comforting because I know who exactly bought Mike Johnson. There's no question about it. It is a pretty clear quid pro quo. And I just think, you know, there has been the suggestion that politicians, like race car drivers, should have their sponsors Like, they should have to wear a special suit with the commercial branding of their sponsors on it. And Mike Johnson, AIPAC, and Mick, right front and center. Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman. I think he would look good in it. Yeah. I think he could pull it off.
And it wasn't just AIPAC getting his vote on Israel. Obviously, he apparently got another 75,000 that they've able to trace. You know, these things will come out over time, especially when you go to some of those websites that report on some of this stuff. But he got another 75,000. Not exactly sure who that came from, but it came from somebody who lobbies for the Defense Department. So in that case, it was probably the money for Ukraine or the money for Taiwan, wouldn't you think?
I'm only shocked by how cheap Mike Johnson, how cheap it is to buy Mike Johnson's vote. That is the most surprising thing to me. Although apparently he also had a meeting with American intelligence chiefs.
Yes.
And the timing was right after he come out of this meeting as well. And I think Marjorie Taylor Greene, and I don't hold with everything she says.
Right.
You don't have to. But she suggested a little blackmail, a little threat for John. It's possible. But we've also heard that Trump got completely behind this at the last minute, despite hinting that he was against Ukrainian aid, as subtle as Donald Trump can be. So I don't know exactly what this sea change is in Byzantine American politics, but they stop on a.
You know, we're going to talk now about something else, which I think is really, really important, and that's the subject of money that many Americans believe is being wasted. There is news today that the Ukrainian army is retreating in droves, by the way. And you know who's reporting this, and this is important, right? Ukrainian military commanders are the ones who are saying this. And here's some of the quotes that I pulled from the article. They say that Russian forces are attacking along the entire Eastern Front, which stretches 620 miles. I mean, that's like from, I don't know, Rome to Switzerland, from, Atlanta to New York. I mean, these commanders are also confirming to Western media sources, this is important, that Ukrainian troops are falling back or retreating. And he says the situation is really bad, expected to get worse. And it really makes you wonder why the U.S. and European countries don't stop this before more people, you know, needlessly get killed. And perhaps it's because they just kind of don't get it. And when I say they don't get it, let me give you an example of somebody who had to have this explained to him. Here's Piers Morgan in an interview.
If the West allows him to get away with this, I would not be remotely confident that he would not want to then stomp his way through into other countries. Why are you confident he wouldn't want to do that?
Well, you raise a lot of different issues, and let's first go to the whole subject of what his motivation was for invading Ukraine. My argument, as I said, was that he was prompted by NATO expansion, and this was a preventive war to stop Ukraine from joining NATO. Your argument is that he's basically an imperialist, that he's bent on conquering all of Ukraine, and then when he's finished conquering Ukraine, what he's going to do is move into Eastern Europe. And he's going to, if not restore something that looks like the Soviet Union, he's going to create a greater Russia coupled to a Russian empire. I think that's your view, which is, of course, fundamentally different than mine. My argument is that there is no evidence to support your view. I do not think you can point to anything that Putin said or anything that Putin wrote that indicated that he was interested in conquering all of Ukraine.
Why would you believe it?
Of course, why would you believe him? Why don't you believe me, who knows nothing and has never read anything about Putin, nor do I watch his news conferences or anything else for that matter, says Piers Morgan. I read the New York Times and I watch CNN and the BBC, and that's where I get my opinions. But there's something else here, by the way. I reported a moment ago, and this is important, that these commanders, this one general in particular in Ukraine, is the one who's coming out and saying, look, we're retreating, they're moving forward, this thing's not going to get any better anytime soon. If he were saying that before the U.S. Congress gave him money, I would have said, yeah, he's saying that because he wants more money. But he's saying that after the money has already been delivered, which tells me what he's saying is probably true. No?
Absolutely. This is coming from General Alexander Sirsky. He's the head of the Ukrainian, the Kiev regime's of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the one who replaced Zeluzhny. And he has grudgingly admitted to a tactical withdrawal from multiple parts of the front. Now, here's the thing. He's not actually retreating. His troops, as what happened in Avdiivka, the same thing has happened further west of Avdiivka, where Russian forces have bashed through three rapidly attempted construction defensive lines by the Kiev regime in rapid succession, boom, 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 mm-hmm. within a month or so. And these breakthroughs, Russia's now blooming, they're into operational space. And Kiev regime military units, multiple of them, they are breaking and routing borders. Go into conflict zone areas like Ochorna and Chasiv Yar, a little bit further north, the west of Bakhmut, and surrendering a battalion that was surrounded and surrendered, possibly several hundred troops, considering the Kiev regime's under battalions. So this is actually Sirsky trying to.
All right. Hey, Mark, sorry about that. It's just that you're breaking up a little bit. So what we're going to do is we're going to get a break in, and we're going to come back, and we're going to continue this discussion. And I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about what's going on university campuses, because even overnight, mm-hmm. more protests, more people, more police, more arrests, and we're going to bring you this in just a moment. Stay with us.
Biden's massive foreign aid package was passed by the U.S. Congress. It was met with much fanfare and political bluster. However, even mainstream media cast doubt on whether this aid will change military realities on the ground. Illusions, it would seem, die hard.
Every spring and summer, the melting Arctic snow reveals abandoned machinery, millions of rusty barrels, and the detritus left by human expansion into this most inaccessible of territories.
Я, конечно, был в шоке, как можно было так засраться по самые помидоры. Это просто печальное зрелище.
Volunteers from Clean Arctic travel to Heise Island, home to the biggest polar station on the Franz Josef Land archipelago.
Сера, грязь непролазная. Боже мой, я тут еще целый месяц.
У меня были первые мысли. Нас обманули, нам подсунули какой-то самый стрёмный остров во всем архипелаге.
Это одна из самых северных земель на нашей планете, от которой до Северного полюса примерно 1000 километров.
The Arctic Pioneer's main objective was to explore and conquer these harsh lands. They had no time to think about waste management. Now their legacy could remain for centuries.
Как мы, наверное, человечество в целом выглядим, наверное, нелицеприятно. Такое чувство, что мы застрем эту планетку, а потом полетим куда-то делать это еще.
Чистый север, чистая Арктика!
A new video of alleged abuse by an officer. Today, a sheriff's deputy in Columbia, South Carolina, forcibly removed a student from a classroom at Spring Valley High School.
I saw him just talking to her, whispering to her, and initially, you know, I didn't think it was a problem because I knew that she was just this quiet student in the class.
Someone looks at the police officer and says, here is law enforcement at its worst. Clearly, attacking, abusing power and influence. And then there are others who says this is what's wrong with public school. Poorly behaved, undisciplined black children.
He was there enforcing a law that made it a crime to, quote, disturb schools in any way. That means any disturbance that any kid causes in school is a crime.
Using force is never pretty, but necessary at times. People are never gonna change their minds. Some people will never change their minds about the video. They think I was wrong, and that's it.
Hey, Hey, welcome back. This is Direct Impact. I'm Rick Sanchez. We apologize for some of the little audio glitches we were having there just a moment ago. And we're reestablished now with Mark Sloboda. So he's going to be able to be heard loud and clear. Hey, let's get to what I mentioned just before we went to the break. Two more universities here are reporting mass protests today, students taking to campus malls, protesting against U.S. involvement in wars with an emphasis on the situation in Gaza. Virginia Tech students, place you know well, students at the University of Texas as well, have now started protesting. And if they're anything like the students at Columbia University in New York, they're not going to be going home anytime soon. Listen to this.
We will not be moved by these intimidation tactics. You can see outside you now that the students are mobilized. There's hundreds of them here today. They will not be moved. We demand divestment. We will not be moved unless by force.
I'll tell you, I mean, this thing's growing by the day. A lot of university presidents are perplexed. They don't know exactly what to do. The media is reporting it as if these people who are protesting are all something just shy of terrorists themselves. And police departments have been moved in some cases, moved out in other cases. Here's the thing, though, Mark. Right now, no matter where you are in the United States, if you turn on a TV newscast, these are the pictures that you're going to see. And to that, you say what?
I say that this is a perfect example of American brutal police state repression. In America, you have the right to express your political opinion and to protest freely. Unless, of course, your political opinion goes against American foreign policy and geopolitical orthodoxy, like Israel, then it's clearly shown that you have no such freedoms, right? The freedoms are only good when they don't threaten the interests of the powers that be, like the aforementioned APAC's iron grip on the U.S. political elite. We're going to see this. I mean, I've seen pictures of snipers on roofs, and this is all facilitated because any criticism at all of Israel in the United States is called out by the political elite and by the mainstream media as anti-Semitism immediately. You cannot criticize Israel. Open your mouth and criticize Israel, like John Mearsheimer's did in his book, The Lobby, which with Stephen Walt, which detailed AIPAC's power over U.S. foreign policy. You can't criticize Israel. It's been turned into a verboten crime.
What's interesting is many of the protesters are Jewish students who have the position that they're against the Zionist government in Israel. And the media is having a real tough time trying to explain that one as they cover the story and they hint that there's a sense of too much anti-Semitism, and what the professors and the police are really trying to stop is the anti-Semitism. And then suddenly they turn around to do an interview and the student they're interviewing says, "I'm Jewish." And now they're like, oh, my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. And that happens a lot as I've been watching the coverage in the United States. We need to move on, but I don't know if you want to make a comment on that.
Yeah, they're often just depicted as self-hating Jews who are confused people, I mean, and brushed away.
There is another story, by the way, that's setting the internet abuzz today around the world that it has to do with a very popular talk show host who suddenly disappeared. Staying on this subject that you and I were just talking about, her name is Sanjia Mrushka. She has a show on a place called LBC. It's a network that broadcasts discussions about current events. It's pretty good. I watch them from time to time. It's like a big old talk show. Suddenly, Mrushka's show is nowhere to be found, seems to be off the air. Now, here's why people are wondering what happened. It's because her last show that she did was an interview with an Israeli official. I've got a clip of it. I'm going to show it to you. Here it is.
What Israel did by taking that action against Iran was escalate what is already an incredibly fragile situation.
Sanjita, that's an outrageous framing of the reality.
It's not an outrageous framing. I've just been speaking to somebody who is a diplomat to government. That's not an outrageous framing of it. What Israel did.
It's fascinating that all she's saying is something that is true. The Israeli official fires back at her, and now she's off the air. I mean, to prove your point, by the way, what you were just saying.
I've been on LBC, full disclosure, before, and this isn't a surprise to me. The control of the Israeli power is as powerful in the United Kingdom as it is in the United States. We saw the former opposition leader, the former Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, slandered and driven from his position over obviously false accusations of anti-Semitism simply because he criticized Israel. And it's just amazing to me how much the American and even the British political elite put the national interests of Israel, and specifically Zionist Israel, over American interests. It's just boggling to me. Joe Biden himself, how many times has he said, I am a Zionist? Does he know what that means? That the support of a greater Israel over territory that belongs to other countries.
Something else I want to talk about while I have you. I want to show you a fascinating headline. This is coming out of Australia. Here it is. I found this fascinating. You have a real a geopolitical sense about you, so you maybe will be able to explain this to us a little better. The article says that India's Modi government operated a nest of spies in Australia. And I thought, what? So you heard it right. According to Australia's head of the country's intelligence organization, like their CIA, since 2021, Indian spies have established relationships with current and former politicians in Australia, as well as a foreign embassy and state police services inside Australia. So here's Australia saying, the Indians have spies in our country and they're spying on us. What's going on here, Mark?
Okay, so newsflash, all countries spy on each other. The U.S. routinely gets caught spying on its allies like the Netherlands, often with Denmark, which is a little closer to the U.S., acting as a facilitator. All countries spy on each other. What's more interesting here is that it's being called out in public.
Yes.
And this is something we see increasingly across the Western media. There seems to be some heady editorial lines as the political rhetoric is heated up against the Indian government of Prime Minister Modi, because he's seen as not getting in line with U.S. interests and not stopping trade with Russia. And he's about one step away from being declared an enemy of the United States, like China over it.
That's fascinating. I thought the same thing, not to mention something else I'll throw in. He's almost getting a little bit, not he, India's getting a little too big for its britches. The IMF has just said that they're about to be the third biggest economy in the world. They were 5, went to 4, now 3. Eventually, they're going to be 2. They're going to have a $10 trillion economy. That probably isn't sitting so well in places like New York, I would think, no?
Yeah, especially when that economic power eventually translates into military power and geopolitical power, right? And India becomes more defensive of what it sees as its own interests rather than the interests of U.S. hegemony. And they're buying a wholesale of Russian oil and other resources in contravention of U.S. sanctions is just one case in point.
I want to know what you think as we go here. I think we've got about 2.5 minutes left. Harvey Weinstein, back in the news, said to be hospitalized after hearing that his life sentence had been overturned. The question now being asked is, what is the right standard of evidence for a sex crime in the United States? This is what people are talking about on the streets and at dinner tables. Weinstein, of course, you should know, was once the most successful, richest man in Hollywood until he was sent to prison for life after sexually abusing women who wanted to be in his movies. A court has now thrown out his conviction, which is not sitting well, by the way, with at least one of the jurors who found him guilty. Here it is.
When you saw the news this morning that Weinstein's conviction had been overturned, what did you think?
I was totally in shock, because it took us a long time to come to that decision, and then for them to overturn it, it was totally shocking.
So, but there's a big conversation starting here. Apparently, the judge threw it out because they brought in witnesses that had nothing to do with the case. These are women who had bad experiences with him before. And I'm thinking it's probably going to create an argument in the United States with people saying, you know, it shouldn't just be about he's a bad guy, let's put him in jail, that there may be a lot more going on here. Have you thought about this at all?
Not a whole lot, being across the water now, as it were, on this. But, you know, I've seen it from afar. And it seems that there has kind of been a scarlet letter Salem witch trial fervor that has dominated U.S. politics on issues of sex and gender over this woke movements, the Me Too movements and so forth, which is not my defense of Harvey Weinstein in
Of course. Listen, I get it. You know, there's a difference between I'm a bad guy sometimes. You're a bad. We've all had bad moments in our lives. You live a long life. You screw up. You make mistakes. We do things that we wish we hadn't done. I get that. None of us are perfect. But what he was doing was over the top. The question is it life in prison over the top, or is it just you're an idiot, you're a cad, you deserve to be called a bad guy? I mean, do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, life in prison. I'm personally, that seems a little excessive to me. But then again, I'm not a woman. I'm more concerned with of public opinion, and how through media and social media's witch trials that entire careers have been ruined before any legal mechanism takes place.
Well, that's a good point. And maybe that's the last point to leave this on, is the fact that the media decided they were going to make this guy the worst person in the world. And the court system seemed to pick up on that energy that was created, and it may have festered its way into the case. And maybe that's what this appeals court is looking at and saying, no. No matter how bad the guy is, he still deserves his day in court, and it has to be just. I think that's what the court is saying. I hope that's what the court is saying in this case. And again, like you, it's not to defend Harvey Weinstein. This has been a good example of a good conversation about a lot of things going on that we need to be discussing. Mark Sloboda, as usual, my thanks to you. Say hello to your mother, if that was her calling. And we'll be catching up with you again very soon. And that's it for us. Before I go, I should remind you, by the way, of our mission. Simple, really. De-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these little boxes. Truths are, they don't live in boxes. They're everywhere. That's what we believe on this show. I'm Rick Sanchez. I'll be looking for you again here to provide a direct impact.